And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning. If you're just after joining us, you missed an interesting Friday panel. You might not always agree with everyone, but that's part of it. That gets the conversation going too. Thomas Pringle, Cathy Donaghy and Councillor Finan Bradley. If you missed that, it's part of our podcast service that we have here as well, of course. The programme broken up into three parts. It's available on our website at around about 12:30 daily. A caller says, I think it's not the Jewish people we're worried about, it's that governments are afraid to stand up against the Israeli government. They seem to have control over so much of the world. I have no insight into Jewish people whatsoever. I don't know what level of support or information the people of Israel are receiving, how opposed they are to what's happening, how in favour they are to what's happening. I have literally no insight into that whatsoever because I'm not exposed to it. Most people see Gaza as a genocide, but it's not the top of people's priorities. It's the cost of living crisis and immigration. How can you trust any media source funded by government? Most of the population disagree with mass immigration, but the media is not reporting on it. That's what we should be focused on. That's discussed extensively on this program in any case, particularly, and it is pretty much with politically agreed in this part of the world as well, that in terms of Donegal's capacity to house more people coming into the country, that there is not the capacity there. So you have obviously very active groups in here that choose to do whatever they choose to do on the ground. But we've heard from Fianna Fáil representatives, Sinn Féin representatives, who have concerns about where people are being located. They have concerns about the number coming in here and have said really quite clearly that they believe that there is that Donegal's services are at breaking point in terms of that. Others have suggested that certain allowances, these are elected political representatives, that certain allowances that people are getting, it's unfair in terms of the rental market, third level education. Like, I'm not sure what's being said out there in terms of what the public feel that hasn't been fully reflected on this programme and Counterviews as well, but also too seems to be the opinions of elected representatives in this county as well. So I think sometimes we presume that what we're passionate about is not getting enough coverage or is not being talked about at all. But I hope really in just what I've just said, it's very clear that in terms of this programme, the cost of living crises and the impacts of immigration and emigration are talked about openly, respectfully, extensively, not based on someone's background, their race or what have you, but on in terms of the ability for an area to... Now, I'm not saying that's my opinion. I'm just saying these are the opinions that are routinely platformed and, as I say, align with the on-the-record opinions of elected politicians as well. So beyond that, other than getting militant, like, what else is there? We just continue to keep reflecting the views of the public. A caller says, I agree with Cathy that what is happening in Gaza is so horrific. The loss of innocent life is right to be called out by President Higgins. But ironically, he sees nothing wrong with the abortion holocaust that he enabled ultimately with the stroke of a pen. Bit of ambiguity there. His capacity to resist that, I'm not sure how much it's there. And also to then we get into a further conversation that the what's happening in Gaza is not the same as abortion. I'm not saying that that's the case, but that's why it's not really that simple, because some people see it as something completely different. What do you mean, Greg? How can the powerless general public be compared to the inactive politicians who've power to do something? Don't compare us to them. Speak for yourself. If you could just text back in or call back in, and I'd love to respond. If you could just let me know exactly what you're talking about there, I'd be very happy to either, you know, back up what I said or clarify what I said or retract what I said if necessary. But let me know what you mean, what you're referencing there, because we get a lot of messages in over the course of the hour. Shocking how all your Friday guests are always in an echo chamber, Highland offering zero political opposition, and your guests are all of the same opinion. Okay, in relation to the conversation about Gaza, I think Finan thought that we were doing as much as we can. Thomas Pringle thought that we're certainly not doing enough, and there was a level of complicity there because we aren't doing enough. In terms of the presidential election, that was the first one we talked of. Finan would back Jim Gavin. In fact, he'd back Bertie Ahern if he was the nominee. We heard from Thomas Pringle, for an example, say that he wouldn't, in fact, almost laughed at the idea of it and said that he would be not only backing but campaigning for Catherine Connolly. If you're talking about what's happening in Gaza, let me know, because I'd also be interested to have a conversation with you about what your counter-narrative on that story is, because those are the three things we talked about. I presume, because there was also a bit of a difference of opinion in relation to whether we are, you know, less caring about each other and our surroundings. But outside of that, if you could just, again, let me know specifically what you're talking about, I would love to address that. I agree with Kathy. What is happening in Gaza is so horrific. I read that one. If Bertie Ahern is elected president of Ireland, it proves that many people in Ireland support corruption. For goodness sake, he claimed he had no bank account when he was Minister for Finance. Fianna Fáil oversaw the bailing out of the banks, for which we are still paying off. Well, I think we've got most of that back and interest from the banks. I'm not saying we've got it all back, but we took over the banks and got a lot of that money back. I must check into that, actually, to see how much of a deficit there is now from that bailout. If any at all. I see many a country mad to get their peacekeepers home, but Ireland is the complete opposite. What has Gaza to do with Ireland? Let's get our own country sorted first. I think it would be interesting in the time of the Troubles if there wasn't outside influence. If the world just said the British can do whatever they like in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, if there was no international scrutiny of it, no international involvement in trying to achieve peace, no international interest from various NGOs, dirty words nowadays, but or foreign media. I wonder where we'd be at now in terms of this state under British rule. It's an interesting conversation to have. Where would we have been without the backing that we received, the Americans at that time, for an example, but also the international outrage at some of the most shocking events of the Troubles on both sides, in inverted commas, on both sides. So, you know, where would we be now if other countries just said, sure, that's what's happening in Ireland, let the British do whatever they want to do, it's none of our business? And that's a question. I'm simply asking you a question. And if you believe it a valid one, fine. If you don't, that's fine too. We're going to have to address the elephant in the room, namely the dire impact of mass immigration on Donegal. Yep, another one saying the same thing there, but it's not an elephant in the room because we've discussed every element of that. Even this week, we did a full hour on some concerns people have about security, for an example. A caller believes Dahi O'Shea would make a great president. Wouldn't it be funny if he was at some sort of a presidential meeting and there were like 30 other presidents there and he went up to them and says, you know, each president, and said a little bit of funny thing to show how great a memory he has. But anyway, maybe Dahi O'Shea. A caller says Israel controlled the wealth of the world and America. The USA and Germany would never go against them. They're supplying them with what they need. I wonder if the German support to do more with guilt than finances, I don't know. Regarding the candidates for Irish presidency, our young people are not interested in voting. They only think about their own welfare and their future. Well, the young people that can actually vote make up a certain percentage of the population. 6 out of 10 of us didn't bother our backside 7 years ago. 6 out of 10. That's not all young people. Lots of us don't care. Here's a good question to ask your panellists. Why is Enoch Burke still getting paid his salary into his bank account from the school if he's not entitled to show up there every day after all this time? Why are they afraid to stop paying him? Because they're legally, they're not allowed to stop paying him. They must pay him because his dismissal is the subject of an appeal. So whilst, as is the rule for every teacher, whilst that appeal is pending, he gets paid. So the reason probably they're afraid to is it would be a breach of employment laws. So until such time as that appeal is heard, he is on the payroll. Hi, Greg. We were ignored. How everyone can see that mass immigration is ruining Donegal. A lot of people saying the same thing. How can any sane person want Bertie Ahern to be president after what he did? Again, as I say, he would enjoy a certain level of support, I think. Who in the right mind, says another, would vote for Bertie Ahern, a man who wrecked the country, or even Mary Lou, whose plans would wreck the country? Hi, Greg. We're being gaslit on migrant crime in Donegal. Our councillors and media don't want any criticism of this irresponsible mass immigration policies. Again, that presumes that we're not having these conversations all of the time. I'm not saying I agree with what you're saying, but people are saying that here all of the time. Councillors have been out speaking about the need for extra patrols. I'm not going to go through the list again, but Please don't. I just, especially, you know, very intelligent people texting in some of those comments. And maybe it's just that you see that that's what's written on Facebook or X or on a Telegram group, that, oh, the media's ignoring things. But listen to the content and realize that we have, you know, very diverse, fulsome conversations. Morning, Greg. Do you think there's too much media coverage about the presidential election? I know you don't watch RTE News, but every evening for the past 3 weeks, they've been talking about a forthcoming election that the general public don't really care about going on at the turnout last time. I don't know. Like, we kind of focus on it a little bit on the Friday panel when it's relevant. And obviously, Piers Doherty's name was chucked in there, so it's relevant. There's not much happening in the world of news at the moment. And I know people might say there's a lot happening, but in terms of, you know, political coverage, there's not a great deal happening, so it's going to get more attention. Is this not a waste of money? What does the president do but waste money, believes a listener or asks a listener. Good morning, Fionn Bradley endorsing Bertie Ahern for president. What's wrong with him? This country is a mess and we need a leader with integrity, which are few and far between in Ireland. Listen, thank you so much for all of your messages coming in so far this morning. I've got a really good sample of them there. Keep them coming to 086 60 25000. We'll be back with more after the break. We heard the really sad news yesterday that Ollie Horgan had passed away of Cahir-Morris, Corran, Dulla, Galway, Salthill, Galway, Letterkenny, Donegal. Ollie Horgan passed away on Thursday morning, August 28th, 2025, with his much-loved family by his side, beloved son of the late Joe and Bernie and brother of Martin. Ollie is mourned by his wife Anita and their children Emma, Anthony, Brendan, Connor and David, sister Mary and brother Jer. He will also be missed by Kit, Brian and Caroline and his nephews, nieces and extended family. Ollie, of course, as we know, loved his football, his family and his friends, and he was very much loved himself and was a very important part of life here in County Donegal. And we're going to be focusing on Ollie as a man, but also, of course, as his involvement in Finn Harps over 3 years in a moment. Sorry, it's the 3 years that our guest was involved with Finn Harps. I'll get to that in a moment, but I want to go first to Damien McCrory, who's principal of St. Union's College, Letterkenny. Damien, thank you for joining us. Unfortunate for us to be speaking and reflecting on the very sad passing of Ollie Horgan at just 57.
Thank you, Craig. We're just devastated. News started to filter through yesterday morning that Ollie had passed away. The school community was just devastated at this. And we're just trying to come to terms at the moment with this and trying to support each other as much as we possibly can.
Talk to us about Ollie in the school environment, described as a wonderful colleague, his laughter and good humour resonating with his work colleagues.
Yeah, I think the statement that we issued yesterday evening, and that was in consultation with his wife, Anita, and the comments that are coming in underneath it is testament, okay, to what type of a man Ollie was. Ollie was with us since 1989, and he continued to be a servant teacher right up to yesterday. He taught maths, physics, and in the more recent years, well, he had always a very, very keen interest in the PE side of things, but he would have had taken on a lot of PE in the most recent years. And he was just a true gentleman, to be quite honest. He had great wit, great humour about him, and he had, you know, he was a character. It was one of a kind, but he had a side that, as the stories are beginning to unfold and people's talking about them, you know, that caring side that came out was just unbelievable. He was so supportive to every member of staff, to every student that he would have come across.
Obviously, and incredibly,
that was very evident.
Obviously, incredibly committed and passionate about teaching. We'll get on to the sport in a moment. But what rings through in all the words that I'm hearing is the pride and joy he had as a family man and and about his family.
Yeah, and that would be right. And like we were very privileged to have all these four boys, Anthony, Brendan, Connor, and David, come through the school. And you could see that he had such pride. And I know he had such pride in Emma, who was at the Loretto down below us. And he had such pride in all of them. And it, you know, and he didn't. you know, he didn't boast about them, but they did, went on to do very well for themselves. And, you know, and that was that. But you could see that when you mentioned them or asked about them, that that pride came through in his face. And it's just, yeah, it's, I'll be honest with you, we're still trying to come to terms with the fact that we've lost this unique man from us. And it's quite devastating now. To our school and to the community at large.
Okay, listen, Damien, thank you very much indeed. Damien McCrory there, who's principal of St. Union's College in Letterkenny. And in studio with me is Declan Kerr. And Declan, condolences to you as well, because not only have you lost someone who you worked closely with, who you had a great deal of respect for, but also someone that came to be a personal friend of yours. So a difficult time for yourself too.
Yes, indeed, Greg. I suppose over the last number of weeks, we had been hearing about Ollie's health issues. And I suppose while in the more recent weeks, we knew probably that he wasn't going to make it, it's still a very, very difficult time for us all. And yesterday morning, when the news began to filter through of the reality of Ollie being gone, he's a huge loss, first of all, to his family. To his wife Anita, and the four boys, and his daughter, and the extended family, and of course the McGinley family are from Letterkenny here and well known in the area. So Ollie's a native of Galway, but he's been in Letterkenny since 1989, and I suppose I would have had a long association with Ollie going back to his Fannin United days, covering games in the Ulster Senior League. He would have won Ulster Senior League titles, and he also won an FAA Intermediate Cup in 1995. So yes, it's a huge loss to the football community, but most of all, it's a huge loss to his family.
Talk to us a little bit about his character.
Well, he was a very strong character, very strong character. He had very strong beliefs in what he wanted to do in terms of football, but he was also a very decent man, a very human person, and a very caring person. And I can think of examples during his Van Harps days when players would get injured during a game, maybe down in Longford. I know that is one case where a player had to go to ED. Ollie, who always travelled by himself, never travelled on the team bus. Ollie would stay on in ED, bring that player home, maybe in the early hours of the morning. That's the type of stuff behind the scenes that Ollie Horgan would have done. And he always had a great time for people. He was a people person. And if you ever rang Ollie, if he didn't pick up, he would ring you back within a few minutes. It was never a day, it was never 2 days. And I don't know where he got the time, because I can tell you the phone must have been to his ear nearly 24/7.
But he loved it, you know, and sometimes when you love something, it doesn't necessarily feel like a burden or work.
No, he loved it. He wouldn't have done it otherwise. Yeah. He was, like, in terms of his football and management, both as a player and particularly at Finn Park, at Finn Harps. I mean, he gave it his all. He put everything else on hold in terms of Finn Harps. He would go to the ends of the earth to get a player. He often did. I mean, if he couldn't get them in the League of Ireland, he would go to England, Scotland, and into Europe to get players. So, yeah, it was a labour of love.
But he was very good at that, wasn't he? I mean, I've read stories in the past of him attracting players, be it to Finn Harps or to Galway, you know, that had UK options, had league football options, but he was able to persuade them that their future lay with a smaller, compared to the British options, Irish club.
Yeah, he was very persuasive, and I suppose he was so passionate in the way that he talked to players. I've seen there just in the social media just in the last 24 hours, Adam Foley, who would have played in Northern Ireland and who had been out of football for a while. Ollie went up to Dublin at very short notice to persuade him to come to Finn Park. Adam had no intention of coming, but he was out of courtesy. He met him. But within 3 minutes, Adam was convinced by what Ollie was saying, and he was a Finn Harps player within 24 hours. And actually that season, Adam had played a significant part in Harps' season that season. So that's the type of thing. I can think of players like Barry Malloy from Derry City who came, Barry McNamee from Derry City who came. I mean, that's in more recent times. So yeah, he had that persuasiveness.
You have to back that up, don't you? Yes. You can't just persuade someone to come and then, all right, I've got you. You know, you have to be able to back that up, and he clearly was able to do that.
Yeah.
During his time at Finn Harps, he was very successful. He was a successful manager.
Yes, he was, because, I mean, a club with probably the lowest budget in the Premier Division. Obviously, he had to get to the Premier Division first, I suppose. The one big memory everybody will have is at the end of the 2015 season and that playoff, where BJ Banda got the goal to get them up for the first time. And yeah, I mean, it was very challenging in the Premier Division, but he somehow managed to get enough players that were able to, and they always played as a team and as a unit. And sometimes people would have talked about Ollie being negative in terms of when he would be talking to the press or playing things down, but he must have sent some message in the dressing rooms, because when players come out onto the field as a team, I mean, they delivered a couple of promotions and a couple of relegation playoffs, some huge nights at Fan Park, some big ones, including over Derry City and Shamrock Rovers. So, yeah, I mean, he was punching above his weight in terms of the competition that he had in the Premier Division. But, you know, looking at some of the posts from some of the managers in the League of Ireland over the last 24 hours as well, they have nothing but admiration for Ollie Horgan. And he brought something extra to the League of Ireland. He was a larger-than-life character, and he was good for the League of Ireland. And I think other teams and other clubs appreciated that.
Well, do you know what's kind of interesting? Yesterday, I searched Ollie's name on X/Twitter. And at that point, the news wasn't widely known. Very sadly, that he passed. Now, obviously, since his passing, people have used social media to pour out love and admiration and everything that's deserved. But the one thing I noticed is there was a lot of that already there. A lot of Shells fans going, I wish we could get Ollie, or a lot of Galway's fans saying, you know, this is amazing, or he's made a difference. There seemed to be a respect amongst those that know football, the footballing community, a great deal of respect, sort of, and I'm on about before, obviously, we get an outpouring of love and gratitude. And I think that says an awful lot, because that's what his name was associated with. People had respect for him right across the sport.
Yeah, and they knew what he achieved at Finn Park, you know, as I say, you know, with a club with a small budget, challenging against the bigger teams. So they knew what he had achieved, and they recognised that, and that's why you see such an outpouring, even as you say, even before his sad passing yesterday, that there was so much respect for him in terms of what he had done. And he was a man, what you seen is what you got as well, in terms of, you know, speaking to the media. I mean, he was a dream for the media, local media, national media. I mean, he had some great one-liners as well along the way. So, I mean, yeah,
Did he ever play the media at all, I wonder? Especially with talking down stuff.
Well, I suppose...
Sometimes a wee glint in the eye on it, you know?
Ollie was a very clever man.
That's what I'm saying.
Very clever man. I mean, he thought about things. I mean, he didn't rush into things in terms of saying things. Yeah, listen, there would be an element of that. But Ollie always tried to, I suppose, get that little bit extra out of the situation in terms of the team, in terms of promoting the team. He never wanted to blow them up in any sense, but he was always very good to them behind the scenes. But yeah, he wasn't a man for a huge PR in terms of, listen, we're going to win the league or that sort of stuff. I just heard one quote yesterday on social media where he was being interviewed and he was asked, I think it was the 2021 season, where they were sort of maybe at a stage in line for maybe Europe. And he was asked, what about Europe? Well, I don't know about Europe, says, but we might have some hope of going to Lourdes.
Okay. In terms of your friendship, would he... how did he deal with victories and losses? Was he a steady Eddie, or did he really love the victories and felt the losses very deeply, or did he keep his cards to his chest?
Well, I would say deep down, losses, I mean, hurt him very badly. But I think he had a very sort of same approach to, you know, not getting too down or too up in terms of the PR on it. But deep down, defeats really hurt him, and he certainly would double down in terms of his efforts for the next game in terms of what he could do to resolve that and maybe get a positive result. But no, he would, he never, he certainly in terms of winning, he would never blow it up. He would always keep it on a fairly level keel, but that was Ollie. That was Ollie. He'd never done it. He was a man that never sought publicity. He got plenty of publicity, but he never sought it.
Yeah, we've seen Grimsby recently, you know, having a result that will go down in history. Perhaps not quite on the same scale, but during his tenure at Finn Park, he certainly did deliver some very memorable nights that some fans might have to wait some time again to experience.
Yeah, listen, he was there for 9 years. He was the longest manager ever and one term at Finn Park, so he has that to his credit. Things have moved on. Harps are in the first division. They have a big game tonight against Treaty. A win there would put them certainly in the frame for the playoffs. Things have changed, but hopefully those days will come back again, and good work being done there at the moment, so hopefully that will come back. But yeah, listen, the fans across Donegal and further afield had many great nights, not alone here at Finn Park, but right around the country.
Yeah. Ollie was an absolute gentleman, says the listener, a great manager at Finn Harps and a lovely, caring friend. Rest in peace, Ollie. That comes in from Anne Kelly. Ollie was a true legend, says another listener, and will be missed. He was so good to my two boys at St Union's, and even got one to be able to attend Finn Park. He'll be missed by a lot of people. Another, Ollie was a true football legend. His knowledge of Donegal football was second to none. He always gave of his own time to help local football clubs when possible. His memory and players he had worked with over years was unbelievable. When you met him, he would always genuinely ask about players from our club that he'd coached over the last 25 years and how they were doing. Ollie loved football, and football loved Ollie. Rest easy, Ollie. Football will miss you. You recognise those character traits in Ollie, his love of the grassroots and his memory?
Yeah, I was just going to say, we were talking about Finn Harps and me in here, but his contribution to Fannet United in the Ulster Senior League. So he was well known in the Ulster Senior League. He had three Ulster Senior League titles there, and that's as a manager, and also as a player he would have been well known. So listen, he made a huge contribution to soccer in Donegal from he came here in 1989, and also at St Union's College. He was a coach to a number of sides that won all Ireland titles, and of course he was involved at international level with the Irish schoolboys for over 20 years as a coach. I mean, he was a very, very busy individual in terms of football. But that, as you said already, it was a passion. So it wasn't like work to him.
Yeah.
He really enjoyed it.
And when he left Finn Park, obviously then took up an assistant manager's role at Galway United. Yeah. Very hands-on, very important in that setup as well.
Yeah, and, you know, he joined John Caulfield there, who was the manager. And in the first season, they got promoted to the Premier. Stayed in the Premier last year. Had a good finish to the season. So, like, Ollie's credentials in terms of management and that sort of stuff are second to none. And he's proved that both at Finn Park and at Terryland Park. I mean, he's a Galway man, a native of Galway, and I suppose it was nice for him in the last couple of years to have had that opportunity to be involved with Galway United and the Premier Division.
But life is so cruel. He's only 57 and, you know, robbed of a possible return to Finn Park or other football memories with other clubs. Like 57 is just, and I think that's why people are feeling this loss so deeply. And I'm not saying the older you are, the less we miss you. That's not my point. But at 57, he still had so much to give, not least to his family. But I mean, obviously, I recognise that. That's first and foremost. But 57 is just too blooming young. Like,
it's hard to comprehend. And as I say, when news probably early in the year started to emerge, maybe that he had some health issues, and then things got probably a bit more serious, and you were still hoping that there would be some way around it, but obviously it wasn't to be.
Did you manage to get down to see him?
I didn't manage to get down. I was in contact with him by text message, and that's because obviously in later times, deteriorating health condition, it wasn't possible to do that.
And the priority also is time with family as well.
All that, yeah. But I was in contact with him, and I was in contact with family members and friends who were down there. So listen, it was a very difficult time for the family and a very difficult time for the whole football community, both here in Donegal, Galway, and right across Ireland.
And I'm not sure we all deal with grief differently, but I hope that this outpouring of love and respect and support reaches the family and helps them through what is a very difficult time. But they are going to be joined in The Morning by people had so much respect for Ali, recognized what he does, his legacy. He's written into history, his life intertwined with Unions, with Finn Harps and the other passions and interests Fanage United, as you mentioned. And I hope, in time, they'll be able to use and reflect on all of that to show that, you know, how proud they can be of him.
Yeah, I think, listen, the man's legacy should be recognised in whatever way. This is not the time to talk formally about that, but certainly into the future, Ollie Horgan's legacy to football right across the country, but more particularly, I suppose, when we're thinking about it here in Donegal through his Fanage United and his Finn Harps, that something should be done to recognise a man. Like, listen, he was unique. He was some man for one man.
Yeah. Okay. And listen, Declan, I know you've come in to help us talk about Ollie, you know, and all he's contributed, but also obviously speaking to us through grief too, at the loss of someone you had a great deal of respect for and someone you counted on as a friend as well. So we appreciate your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Declan Kerr there, remembering the late Ollie Horgan. It's hard to put that into context, really, in one's mind, just 57 years of age. But I hope we did him justice in remembering him there. If you have any further memories or interactions with Ollie you wish to share, feel free to get them into us, 086 60 25000. Now, we welcome into studio Pat Boyle, director of the Waterfront Hotel in Dunloe. And I know, as you've been saying off air, Pat, you've been incredibly busy the last week. So you would have had an excuse to take a day off, but you didn't. You've come in to speak to us. Thanks very much indeed.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, this is in the context of the Waterfront Hotel in Donegal being placed on the market. I know it's a hotel that's very important to the owners of it. It's sort of intertwined, not just in business, but in personal feelings and all that type of stuff as well. It was acquired about 10 years ago by Chicago-based businessman Kevin Boyle, as I mentioned, whose family has strong connections with the area. We talked at the time, and it was really a passion purchase as well as a business purchase.
Absolutely, yeah. So Kevin and I would be first cousins, and the hotel was purchased on the 21st of June 2015, after a labour of love and an incredible amount of money. We refurbished it and opened our doors in July of 16. We're merely custodians of the hotel. Senator Paddy McGowan, he built the hotel and opened it in 69, and I think, as I say, that, you know, there's been, you know, different custodians over the years, and we've been there for 10 years. I personally have, you know, been there for 10 years.
You saved the hotel, really, as well, didn't you? I mean, because if anyone went to that hotel now, if they didn't know how much effort, time and passion and money was invested into it to bring it to what it is now, it's one of the nicest hotels in the county and one of the nicest settings. But it wasn't like that when you took over.
It wasn't. The hotel comprises of around 30,000 square feet. And over the years, we had different ideas as to, you know, enhance the facility. And in 2021, we opened our fitness centre there, which is actually one of the largest fitness centres attached to any hotel on the island of Ireland. You know, the equipment there is magnificent. It's comparable to what you'd find in some of the Premier League football clubs. A great asset to the town. We endeavoured to, you know, open up a spa there as well, and COVID hit us in 2020, and that was all put on hold. And after, you know, multi-million euro investment in the property, and I say in the property, you know, that it's actually the staff of the hotel that make it what it is. You know, that they're the wheels that turn the cogs, or the cogs that turn the wheels. And it's about the people there. Some of the people that have been there, worked there since we opened. Their parents, their grandparents have been tied into, you know, to the hotel industry in Dunloe. We, as I say, we endeavour to open a spa there, and it's going to take another significant amount of money to get that across the line. So, you know, we're hoping that somebody's going to take the hotel from, what I would consider to be wonderful to fabulous.
Right, so You know, and in choosing the words carefully, I think, described yourselves as the current custodians of this hotel. Why is the time now to pass that baton to whomever else might take it over? Why was that decision made?
Well, it's a financial decision, essentially, because to get it to the next level, it's going to take a, you know, another significant sum of money. You know, that I know what that figure would be, but that's not for me to say, because it's, you know, for the next custodian, you know, people who want to drive that, because at the moment the hotel is wonderful. And we've been there 10 years, you know, in that particular business. Kevin, you know, owns the hotel, and he invested significantly, and he and I have now invested in other businesses, you know, in the county significantly. And it's a case of, you know, do we want to continue pumping money into any particular, you know, business there? And the answer to that for the moment is got to be no.
So it's a kind of a decision in the context of a wider portfolio.
Well, not really. No, you know. Again, I'll say this: that the hotel, you know, is at the moment, as far as I'm concerned, a wonderful, you know, establishment. And to get it to be a destination resort, the spa needs to open, and you know, the nuts and bolts are there for that. The mainframe is there for that, but. Do we want to just continue looking at it as it is? And the answer to that is, you know, significantly no. So we're hoping that somebody else, it may be a collaboration possibly, or, you know, a new purchase for somebody that has the skill set, the wherewithal and the means to bring it to the next level. And so that you know, we're not happy sitting on the sidelines looking at it, not you know,
reaching its full potential. It must be frustrating if you have a vision and you believe that it doesn't fit the business at this time. How big is the pool of, you know, maybe a consortium, another hotel group, or even, you know, a well-funded individual? How big is the pool that might be looking at an investment like this?
It wouldn't be, you know, I would call it a pond more than a pool. Okay. Yeah. So it's, where we are situated, we're rural islands, and Donegal, we're the second largest county in Ireland. Donegal was very much the forgotten county for many years until, in actual fact, you know, in my opinion, until COVID come along and people actually saw the natural beauty, you know, which was fabulous. Staycation, people coming from the south, never spent any time in Donegal. And I, at one point there, you know, I was talking with some people from Fulshire Island, and they identified a couple of years ago that we were the main destination for the first time. So it's to get for argument's sake, that some of the big consortiums to Dunlow, for argument's sake, is going to be a stretch. But it doesn't have to be that. You know, there are people out there that have got foresight and actually have the financial means to bring
it. We are sitting on the shoulders of the season, right? So we're heading into a period of time whereby hotels aren't making money in that period of time, effectively.
Absolutely.
Right? You hope you've had a good summer and you can carry that through to the winter. We don't know how long the process of, you know, a new owner coming on board and everything else that goes on. Is the intention to keep the hotel open full time as a going concern until such time as the keys are handed over to someone else? And I'm kind of thinking with the staff in mind in the back of my head and others in the local community.
Yeah. So many hotels close seasonal. They'll close, it could be for 2 weeks or a month. We historically have maybe closed for a couple of weeks in January. It burns up holidays. It allows us to carry out maintenance and so on. We have no intention, and I must say emphatically, we have no intention of closing that hotel. We, you know, we've actually just applied for a late license for, we got a Halloween ball, fancy dress ball. There's works ongoing. We've literally just been excavating and fitted fibre broadband last week.
Brilliant.
So our investment continues in the hotel, in the area, and in the people.
It will be sold as an active going concern.
Absolutely.
What does this mean?
If it's sold at all.
You don't necessarily, the right person to come in, yes, but it's not a fire sale.
It's no, not at all, not at all. And, you know...
No one suggested that, but I'm just picking up on the words that you use.
Well, no, some people have.
Have they? Okay, right.
Online, yeah.
I was aware of that, sorry.
You know, everything from, you know, it's going to be a hotel for the international refugees and so on. And, you know, look, you know, it's a free country and people are entitled to their opinions. And But like front doors, most of us have one.
That's quite... normally it's bum holes, but anyway, I'll...
I could have put it another way.
So what does this mean for the likes of Sweeney's Hotel and other investment properties that you have?
Well, you know,
they say everything's for sale.
Well, that's true, and everything is for sale, you know, to a degree. But we are actually looking at a further investment, and so we've got a couple of buildings up for sale, for argument's sake. So we're going nowhere at the moment, and you know. People say, you know, oh, you're getting out. Well, that's not true. Mm. So as I say, we're looking at another property at the moment, and it's not a million miles away, but it's not on our doorstep. So
is it in this county?
Well, again, I don't want to get into the
nitty gritty,
but yeah. So we've actually been looking actively for the last 6 months at and in talks with other people, and like anything, you know, we have to fund that, so that's why there's a consideration. We've taken the Waterfront Hotel as far as we want to take it for the moment, and that's why.
And in relation to Sweeney's,
Sweeney's is flying. You know, Sweeney's. We had some sticky moments earlier in the year. We just opened up.
Yeah. So just to be clear, is it your view then that the business model for the Waterfront works with the spa?
Well, you made a very good point a few months ago, Greg, and what you said was we're coming to the end of the season. Mm. To get people to come to that part of the world out of season, October to April, you need to offer something different. You know, that's my personal view. And
I think the accommodation almost has to be the destination. You
absolutely.
Can't be relying on the accommodation being where you live as you explore the destination around you. That's part of it, don't get me wrong.
Absolutely, but,
need to be able to... You need a weekend retreat.
And that's right. And so that's why I believe the spa will take it to that next level.
Okay.
So
in terms of I don't know, your portfolio in this county, at the moment that's the only property that's on the market for me.
No, we've got about 12 properties, you know, in Donegal, and we've got a few of them up for sale. They may remain, you know, but the business is still active. And so, you know, what we're selling are, you know, some of them are just, you know, buildings, and some of them are businesses.
What businesses are they? Can you say?
We have a bed and breakfast. We have hostels. We have a construction company. You know, so it's quite a wide variety there across the board. And so, yeah, at the moment we've got a couple of those up for sale, and they'll either sell or they won't. But at the, you know, our consideration is to get somebody on board for the Waterfront Hotel to bring it to the next level, you know, and that will maybe it will happen, maybe it won't. And if it doesn't, then, you know, I'll be here next year having a conversation about hopefully the spa opening.
All right, okay. I mean, it's like all the options are open.
Absolutely,
on the table. But
I
think it's clear from your language that even while some other hotels close at the moment, this is very much an ongoing concern with the company, very much interested in it, and I suppose that's the best place to be if you want to sell, because you want people to be able to come in and see what's what.
Nobody wants to, you know, sell an empty building, so it's a, you know,
well, there's not many would buy an empty one, but Austin or Austin.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Well, anyway, but you said the vision and you did it. All right, Pat, listen, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much,
Greg. Appreciate it. Take care of yourself.
Thank you very much.
News is going to be a little late. Stay where you are.